I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Peter Thompson. Peter is regarded as one of the United Kingdom's leading strategists on business and personal growth. Starting in 1972, Peter built three successful companies, selling the last to a public company after only 5 years of trading for £4.2 million, enabling him to retire at age 42, something we can all look up to. Since then, Peter has concentrated on sharing his proven methods for business and personal success via audio and video programs, books, seminars, and conference speeches. He specializes in helping coaches, consultants, speakers, trainers, and small business owners to share more of their authentic messages with more people than they could ever dream of reaching on a one-to-one basis by showing them how to write and create and market their very own informational products. With over 100 audio and 100 video programs, 3 books, and numerous booklets written and recorded, he is Nightingale Conant's leading UK author. Peter, welcome to the show. It's great to have you today.
David, I'm delighted to be here, and thank you indeed for asking me. This is a real pleasure for me.
You have such an exciting and extensive background. Tell me a little bit about it, and in particular, tell me why it has led you to do what you do now.
Well, I think I was just so fortunate that I got into business at a very early age, and I almost got into business by mistake. And what happened was that I went to work for a private investigator in the heart of Birmingham, and I was tracing absconded debtors and doing repossessions and driving out late at night in some of the worst areas you could and banging on people's doors and repossessing televisions. Oh, what a hairy time in life that was.
Sounds exciting.
It was exciting. And there was bugging going on and debugging and all sorts of stuff we'll have over a coffee one day, David, I'm sure. But what happened was the guy I was working for had a very focused life in the sense of he was a playboy. And I got to the point where I had so many of my checks, my paychecks, bouncing and not getting paid because he was spending all the money. I went to him one day and I made him an offer, which I hoped he couldn't refuse, which was, give me half the business and I'll stay. Don't give me half the business and I'm leaving. And he decided he didn't want to share it, so I left and I set up on my own as a private detective, tracing absconded debtors. Within a couple of years, we were tracing 4,000 people a month, which is a lot of people. So this was a really great business. And from there, I got into bugging and debugging. From there, I got into the early days of the car firm business, which led me into the leasing business. So I built a finance business, which is the one you mentioned in your introduction, which I built and sold. And after that, I sat down having sold the company and thought, well, what should I do with my life? And I'll tell you more of that story possibly later. And I decided I am one of the few people who actually really enjoy standing and speaking in public. And I love sharing my ideas and seeing that people do things with them. And here we are today, 40 plus years after I started, and still absolutely loving being in business, loving making a difference to people's lives, loving getting rightfully rewarded and having what I call a business and a life of choice. I mean, there's a quick précis.
So it sounds like there's been somewhat of a plan, but also there have been opportunities that have developed along the way.
I think it's more opportunities than the planning side of it, I have to say, David. I'm pretty planned when it comes to daily stuff, and I'm obviously into goal setting and all the rest of it. But I think that I've also been pretty flexible because I've been open to opportunity and I've been prepared to have a go at it. What I've found, and I'm sure that your listeners will resonate with this, is so often when you're an entrepreneur, people tell you that the idea you've got for a business is crazy. So when I decided to be a private detective, people said I must have been mad to do that. Yet it was fabulous, and I made a lot of money and a lot of friends doing it around the world. And then when I decided to get into the leasing business, it was a case in the UK where the then Chancellor, Nigel Lawson, had just put interest rates and tax rates up. And it was just a really hard time in business. But I thought that created an opportunity rather than a problem. And then when I decided to become a professional speaker, and particularly a recording artist, and go to Nightingale Conan, people again said I must be mad because everybody was American who was doing those things, and it wasn't a thing for a lad from Birmingham to be able to do. But, you know, history shows that if you put your mind to these things, then you can, as you know, smash through the plateau.
So, Peter, how do you know what opportunities to pursue and which ones maybe aren't such a good idea?
You know, you never know. I interviewed and met years ago a guy that was part of the board of the company that bought my business. And he was an incredibly successful and incredibly wealthy man. And I went to see him one day, and his butler let me in, and lunch was served on the what's called the chargers, the plate that goes under the plate, was solid gold. It was the most amazing man, the most amazing building that he lived in. And I was talking to him, and I asked him this question you just asked me. And I can only give you his answer. And he said, Peter, you never know till you try them. And if I get 2 out of 5 right, I reckon I'm doing pretty well. And I must admit, since I met him, and it's well over 25 years ago, I've used exactly the same philosophy, that if your gut tells you it's right, then you've got to trust your instincts, because the only reason you've got instincts is to trust them. You can definitely do some research, but as an entrepreneur, we tend to go in the direction that other people won't go. And when, in fact, if I gave you one idea for this, David, it would be this. If everybody tells you it's wrong, it's probably right.
So how do you tune out those voices that are telling you it's wrong? Because I've heard this from lots of other guests.
Yeah. The thing to do is I accept that people will always do the best with the resources they have at their command. And when I did my NLP training, I think that was one of the ideas that really resonated with me, that everybody does the best with what they've got. And therefore, people who are negative about your dreams and your desires, they're doing the best they can do, but they don't have your knowledge, they don't have your experience, they don't have your expertise, they don't have your take on life, and therefore you only have to trust yourself. One of the best books, in fact, I would say, not one of the best, I would say the number one book that I read in my life was Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, which is a brilliant story and also the philosophy of objectivism. And it was recommended to me by two guys who I really rate. And one is Stuart Goldsmith, who's a very successful copywriter and businessman in the UK. And the other is probably the world's most successful self-published author and copywriter, who is Ted Nicholas. And I know both of these guys, and they both recommended Atlas Shrugged to me. That's Atlas in the sense of the world, and shrugged as in shrugging your shoulders. And in there, the lead character is a woman called Dagny Taggart. And somebody asks her a question about how she managed to remain above all the struggles. And she came up with this answer, David. And I tell you what, it just brought a tingle to the back of my neck when she said it. And I read it. She said, I will allow nothing, nothing other than the judgment of my own mind. I'll place nothing above the judgment of my own mind. And I think that is the truth for entrepreneurs, that we just have to trust ourselves. And if the naysayers and the negheads and those who think we can't do it want to say their things, then in some ways they're almost cheering us on. And if we treat them that way, that one day we're going to come round to the point where we're able to say, we won't say it to them because we're not those sort of people, but we're able to say, I told you so. I told you I could do it. I told you I'd make a success of it. And so I like to think they're cheering me on when people tell me I can't do it.
If you do think that they're cheering you on when they tell you you can't do it, and you're pursuing something when everybody else is going in a different direction,
yeah.
But at the same time, you also talked about the fact that if you get 2 out of 5 to work, you're doing well. How do you know when to give up on the other 3 out of 5?
Great question, David. Super question. Right. I think of it this way. There's a lovely expression, you may have come across it, which is don't perfume the pig. Right. And it comes to a point that with your experience, you realize that the course you're pursuing and following is a pig. And it's like they say, when the horse is dead, get off. It's not going anywhere. And it's a case of try it for yourself and see, and let your testing show you what is the truth of the matter. I think it was Warren Buffett who talks about Mr. Market. And I like to think with marketing, I trust the market to tell me, not with its opinion, but with its cash, whether or not an idea I've got is right. And so I'm very happy to throw money, effort, energy, time, focus, et cetera, as an idea and test it. And if the tests show me that it works, I'll keep going. When the tests show me it's wrong, that's when I'll stop. It's a simple matter of the numbers. You know, as you know, David, to be an entrepreneur, you've got to be pretty numerous. You've got to be able to measure, but you've got to know where to measure at the right point. And I see, unfortunately, a lot of people drawing the lines too early, particularly in their marketing. Like, they'll measure after the results of the first mail shot rather than the back end of that mail shot, where they've developed a number of customers who will buy again and again and again. And I see them do adverts and say the advert doesn't work, but they haven't allowed for the fact that they've captured customers, maybe at a loss, but long term, if you measure in the right point, you're actually going to make a profit of it. So it's a combination of experience, knowledge, gut feel, and down-to-earth solid testing. That's what does it for me.
So have you had experience yourself with trying to test something new where the initial results didn't look so promising, but you stuck with it and things turned around?
Yes, absolutely. And that is when I started in the seminar business. I decided what I was going to do, and I'll tell you a bit of that story later. And I started to get into the seminar business, and I was doing direct mail, and it simply wasn't working. I did another piece of direct mail on a program of mine that was an audio program I'd created for Nightingale Conant. And it was called in those days Conversation, the Power of Persuasion. And this is what I did. I think this might be an idea that someone could use. It's certainly something that made me a lot of money. This is what happened, David. I had this audio program. It was cassettes in those days, Conversation, the Power of Persuasion, six cassette program. And it was selling at about $50, £50. You know, it often is the way that stuff sells at the same dollar or pound price, subject to where it's sold. And Nightingale Conant were doing really well with it. Over time, they've just done shy of 30,000 copies of that program they've sold. And I thought I could sell this. And I thought the people who'd be fascinated by it would be people who are coaches and trainers and consultants, because it was the sort of material they would love. And I tried to sell it by direct mail. I couldn't get it to work. And I had a light bulb moment, and it was this. And this is sometimes why you have to follow the passion, I think. I thought to myself, right, this is like a bottle of milk. I can't get people to buy the milk. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to sell them the bottle, and I'm going to give them the milk. And I set up two seminars, and I created an academy called the British Business Consultants and Trainers and Coaches Academy, BBCTA, British Business Consultants and Trainers Academy. This is many years ago. And I offered membership of this academy, and part of membership was 4 one-day meetings a year. And on those 4 one-day meetings a year, I taught people the information that was in my program they could have bought for £50, but they preferred to come and learn it face-to-face at £1,350 a year. And I set it off, and I initially got 150-odd members. So just in the first week, we made £200,000, and this is many years ago. And over the time, we probably did about £1.5 million on it. And that was just simply taking an idea that I was passionate about, and by testing, finding a different way that the market would be responsive to the offer.
While you're testing something until you find the right path or the right channel that the market will react to, how do you overcome the fear that it's not going to work?
Right. What I've found in life is this, David, is I sold my business, as you mentioned in the introduction, for £4.2 million. Let me tell you what happened afterwards. I'd worked for myself for about 20 years up to that point, and that business was just 5 years old when I sold it. The company I sold out to was a main board public company in London, publicly quoted and traded company. And they paid me $1 million in cash and $3.2 million in shares. Right? And the idea was that they were subsequently going to be sold, and that £4 odd million quid that I'd had was going to be worth $6 to $8 million subsequently. However, that didn't happen. What happened was that the company ran into difficulties and its share price fell from £2.42 to 16 pence, which is a big fall, over a very short period of time and during a point when I was under a restrictive covenant and I couldn't sell the shares. So I was stuck with this paper that was worth 3 million quid and in the end was worth confetti. And I had to get rid of my house. I've got a couple of houses, but I had to sell the main house I've got. Cars went, et cetera, et cetera. All these things that go wrong in life. And virtually, not quite, but virtually went back to zero. And the way I dealt with that, David, was, and this is smashing through the plateau, I realized that I could either sit there and put my head in my hands and cry about, oh, why this isn't fair and why me and all the rest of it, or I could just get off my ass and do it again. I proved I could do it once, I could do it again. And I've found with all the successful entrepreneurs I've met, I've talked to, invariably they've run into really hard times in their life. Some of them have gone bankrupt many times, but they have this unending faith that what they have to offer the world is worthwhile, and therefore they will always get up and give it another go. You know the expression as well as I do, David. You know, it isn't a case of how many times you fall down. It's a case of how many times you get up afterwards. As long as you get up one more time than you fell over, then you're still going to be a success. And that's the way I think of it. There's a famous footballer, a soccer player. You may have heard of him. He's an Argentinian. He doesn't play anymore, but he's been famous for lots of time. His name's Diego Maradona. And I went to see him play when Argentina played England at Wembley Stadium, which is the main stadium in England. And I'm not a guy who goes to watch football matches. But I noticed this guy was a genius on the football pitch. But what happened for him was this. Every time he got close to goal, somebody would trip him up, somebody would elbow him, somebody would push him. And I came up with this idea called the Maradona principle. When you get close to your goal, the world will kick you just to check that you're serious. However, it only kicks the scorers. It doesn't bother kicking the referees and the linesmen. It doesn't kick those who aren't in the middle of the pitch trying to do something special with their lives. So when the world kicks you, you just go, bring it on. Is that the best you've got? It's only the world checking that you're serious. That's the way I think of it, David.
As a customer, how can I tell what information products are the best for me? And this also ties into the learning that people who are entrepreneurs need to do.
Certainly, right. If you have a good voice, which you do, I hope I do, we've all got accents, then having an audio or video program is a great idea. As long as we realize that we only need so many customers in life, we're not trying to reach every single person in the world because it's simply not going to happen. So I've got a list of 92 different products that people could use the same information for. For example, from a tips booklet to a book to an audio program to a video program to a seminar to a mentoring group to a newsletter to a paid newsletter to a webinar series to a pack of cards, all sorts of different ways. And it really comes down to what is it that you want to share with people and what ways does your market like to get it? So, for example, I know that despite what's happening with the internet, there is still a big market for audio newsletters. And I don't mean audio newsletters in the sense of online only, by all means online, but it's got to be physically delivered. So there's a big market for most people who are sharing their ideas there. It's where the person concerned, David, is the most comfortable. In my mentoring groups, I have people from all sorts of backgrounds who are mostly coaches, consultants, speakers, trainers, and small business owners, the occasional accountant. I think you could say CPA in America.
Yes.
And those people are probably going to concentrate on something like a tips booklet because they're using their information on product, not necessarily for direct income generation, but more for lead generation. Another person who was a trainer would create a series of products, both audio, video, and written, that would be the follow-up material for the training that they provided. So I don't know if you've ever come across the Ebbinghaus effect. Do you know the Ebbinghaus effect at all?
Why don't you explain it for our listeners?
Okay, the Ebbinghaus effect, it was some work done by a German scientist in the mid-1800s called Hermann Ebbinghaus. It's E-B-B-I-N-G-H-A-U-S, Ebbinghaus, the German spelling. So it's worth anyone looking this up. And it's called the Ebbinghaus curve of forgetting. And it's how people forget information that they've received. Of course, the biggest problem with training is that a lot of training, particularly in soft skills, fades very quickly over time. And part of this reason is because of the Ebbinghaus effect, where people forget information. So a trainer or presenter who wanted to separate themselves from the crowd would create a series of audio, video, and paper-based products delivered possibly online or offline, where their listeners, their students, were able to revisit the information on a regular basis until it became part of their long-term chemical memory rather than their short-term electrical memory, and became part of who they were, and they were then able to use it without a great deal of conscious thought. And by doing this, somebody who was a trainer or speaker would so separate themselves from the marketplace that they become the go-to person, the person of choice. And I've had personal experience of this, of competing. I never think of there's competitors out there, but other companies who've been offering training to companies when I've been doing that, when I used to do that. And even though I'd be far more expensive, people would go with me because I had the follow-up material. So to answer your question, how does somebody select? It always depends on the outcome they want from the creation and marketing of their informational product. If they want it to position themselves as an expert, they need a hardback book. If they want to just use lead generation, they need a lead magnet or a freemium or a golden carrot. It can be a tips booklet or a report. If they want long-term income that comes in month after month after month, and it wants to be a newsletter or continuity product of some description. If they want people to get to know them well, it wants to be video-based so they see them present. Certainly a professional presenter or speaker has got to have a video product and needs a video on their website for certain. You know, video on website bumps up conversion rates like you wouldn't believe. I mean, there are so many different ways. Is that starting to answer some of those questions, David?
Yes. As a matter of fact, you're leading into another question I have, which is, with so many different methods for getting your information across to your audience,
yeah,
if this is the first time that I'm trying to market and sell my knowledge through an informational product, where's the best place to start?
The best place to start is with a tips booklet. And that is simply as simple as this, is to decide on the overall area that you're going to be working in. Let's say somebody was going to create a tips booklet on communication skills, for the sake of an example. They would then write down topic area, communication skills, right? They then write down question, what are the 10 possible chapters in this report, book, call it what you will, informational product? And they would list 10 or more chapters. Then what they do is they take each chapter and they say, what are the 10 or more ideas I've got in this chapter? Yeah? And they'd write those down. Now, they could do that as a mind map. They could do it as a document where it was effectively a list with subhead, subhead, subhead all the time. You got the idea. And then once they'd got that 10 by 10 by 10, really what they would have is about 100 ideas listed out, 10 chapters with 10 ideas. They could start off by creating a tips booklet by writing a tip on each of those ideas. If they wanted to expand it from there, they could write a paragraph on each of those ideas. Or if they wanted to go a little further, they could write a page on average on each of those ideas. And with a page on average of 100 ideas, you've got a 100-page book. And a 100-page book is something you can publish yourself or get published, but I would certainly say self-published in the early days. And with that 100-page book, you could read that out and you'd have an audio program. Or you could put it on a teleprompter and you could create a video. Or you could put it on some screen capture software and have what's called read and speak videos. But it would all start from the basis, David, of getting out of your head your basic information in the sense of the context, the basic chapters, and the basic ideas within the chapters. And that's the process I use for all of my informational products.
Peter, if I have already created some information products, let's say I've created the tips or I've gone further than that, and I've started to get some business and start to make some money through informational products.
Yep.
But let's say I've hit a plateau, and it's working, but only up to a point. How can I figure out what I need to shake things up and get to the next level of success?
Another great question. This is the way I would suggest. We either have to develop a list or buy a list. So we either develop a list by using effectively things like LinkedIn, things like Facebook, things like networking, things like SEO, pay-per-click, all the various ways of marketing in order to attract more clients. We start a podcast, or we start a blog, or we start an e-zine so that we are contacting that database regularly. Or we buy a list, for example. It'd be easy these days to go and buy a list, an email list of, say, 15,000 people for about £1,250. Yep, or the equivalent dollars, let's say $2,000. Yep. With that list over a three-month period, you'd be able to warm that list up, get the unsubscribes to unsubscribe, because obviously there's always going to be some unsubscribes. That's the way that life is. I think of life like this, David. Some will, some won't. So what? Next. Let's get on with it and move on. But you could clean that list over a period of 3 or 4 months. So you were left with 10,000 people out of the 15,000 people who were responsive to your information. Then you start to market them with a highly valued product at a low cost. So, for example, you'd create a fabulous report in the way that I've explained, and I can give you another way to create a report in a moment if you want me to.
Sure.
And then you market that at a low price, $7. It's called these days a tripwire product. So you change them from being just a recipient of information into being somebody who's paid you money. So they change from being a suspect or a prospect into a customer or potentially a client. And then once they've started to pay money, then you move them into your marketing funnel with a series of autoresponders, maybe a webinar, maybe a live event if you wanted to, if that's the sort of market you were in. And slowly but surely, over time, they move from a £7 or $7 product to a $50 to $100 or pound or dollar product. And then maybe some of them become personal clients and pay you a few thousand pounds or dollars a month. And maybe some join a mentoring group, or some engage you to speak or consult. Or it's a slow process, but it's like anything. As long as you decide on what the outcome looks like, it's pretty easy to establish the road to it. What I find for so many people is they don't say, that's the end game for me. That's what it looks like when I've got it done. As Michael Gerber says, what does it look like when it's done, you know, in the E-Myth and E-Myth Revisited?
It's one of the most important questions.
Oh, it is. Well, I think there's two, and I think you're absolutely right. The first one is, what does it look like when it's done? And the second one, and for me, ranks alongside it, is, why do you want it? You know, the classic expression, isn't it? If you know why, you're probably going to try. Simon Sinek, who you may have heard of.
Yeah,
second most watched video on TED. I've got his book. I've read it so many times.
Give so have I.
To all time. Yeah, Start With Why. And his the second book he did was Leaders Eat Last. There's another little cracking book. I mean, he's a good guy. What a simple process. Start with why. I mean, there we go. What's it look like, and why do you want it to look that way? So,
and then everything else can fall into place.
Exactly. And if somebody wanted to create another informational product along that way, let us use as a freemium, for example, or a lead magnet. Let me give a simple six-stage process for someone to do that, Dave. It's really simple. It's this. You start off, if you're writing a report, we'll call it a report or a guide, and you start off by giving somebody perspective. So you've opened the files in their mind, and they know what you're going to be talking about. So if I was going to create a report on, let's say, time management. Yep. I would start off by saying, imagine I'm typing now. As you and I know, and I want you to almost hear me say your name when I say that, David. You know what I mean? So I'm writing one-to-one. As you and I know, there's no such thing as time management. There's only 24 hours every day, 168 hours every week for us to achieve our life's dreams. There is no such thing as time management. There is self-management of the time that you and I have available. Come with me now on a journey, et cetera. So first thing, perspective. The second thing you do is you outline a problem. So it's another P. There's just going to be six P's here. So you outline a problem that somebody has within the context or perspective of time management. That might be, here's the biggest problem people have today, it's email. It pops up all the time, it pings, it gets in the way, etc. Right. Then, third stage, you describe the pain that's created by that particular problem. So we've got perspective, problem, and the pain associated with it in either emotional, financial, or time terms. Then the fourth P is possible solution. So you explain to somebody what the solution is to that problem and its pain. Then you tell them the pleasure that's associated with implementing the possible solution. And the sixth stage is you give them a plan of action. So it's very simple to write a report that you can use as a lead magnet. It's perspective, problem, pain, possible solution, pleasure, plan. How simple could that be? It couldn't be simpler than that, could it, David?
No, you've outlined it very clearly. Peter, there are plenty of authentic people who share their expertise through information products, but there are also plenty of scams.
Yep.
How can we distinguish between them?
These days, I think there is so much in the sense of review online that before buying anything of that type, it's worth going on and searching for the person's name and the word review behind it, and see what the market is telling us. Now, the challenge with that is it only takes one disgruntled person to slightly damage somebody's reputation. But I find that the majority of people who are marketing regularly on the internet that you can talk to other people about and find other people who bought their products. You know, go onto your Facebook group and ask them what do they think of Charlie Smith for the sake of a made-up name. I hope that I'm not talking about any Charlie Smith who might be out there. But, you know, what do we think of Charlie Smith and his new product? And you can bet somebody else has bought it and you can find out. That's the beauty of the internet these days. It's sort of instant peer review, isn't it?
It's way too easy.
It is way too easy. Yeah. But it helps because it raises the game, you know. And there's a lovely expression, which I know you know, which is a rising tide lifts all ships.
Right.
And as the things move up, everybody moves up with it. That's the way it is.
Which is also why, for those of us who are producing things, that social proof is so important.
Oh, absolutely. If you think of the work of Robert Cialdini, and I met Cialdini in London, a lovely guy, and I've read his books, I should say. And if you think of his basic six and the other two factors of ethical influence, then social proof is up there with scarcity and authority figures and consistency and commitment, consistency, reciprocation, obligation, liking, you know, all those things. It's all there. But it's so high on the list, social proof these days. I mean, it's absolutely amazing.
That's great. Peter, what are you working on now that you're most excited about?
Well, over the last probably 4 or 5 years, I've concentrated my time on this idea you mentioned at the start of helping coaches, consultants, speakers, and trainers to share their ideas, their information, their knowledge, their experience, and what I call the magic ingredient, which is their take on it, because that's the one thing nobody else has got. And that's really where the money is when you share your take on it. So what I do is I run a series of one-day events twice a year, which lead to a three-day event, which lead to a mentoring program. So I have three mentoring groups running. And that's where I spend my time in helping those people. I have a few private clients who I meet with on a monthly basis, where I help them particularly with marketing and things like that and copywriting and stuff. But for me, David, the focus is creating a business and a life of choice. And what I say to people, and this is what excites me, is, and I can try and summarize it in three words, and it's this: your words matter. People know some amazing ideas, and unfortunately, because they know them, they think everybody else knows them too. So they devalue them in their own mind. And I remember speaking one day to Paulette Ensign, and she's known as the booklet queen. I think she lives in New York, and she shows people how to write tips booklets. And I've met her. I've spoken on one of her seminars when she came over to the UK, only because I'd popped in to see her, and she said, would you like to speak? And in one of her tips booklets, David, she'd got this idea about using a do list. And I said to her, I said, Paulette, you can't put how to use a do list in a tips booklet. Everybody knows how to do this stuff. It's just too obvious. And she said, well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But what you and I, David, take for granted that this is the way you run your life, 99% of the population haven't got a clue about that stuff. They just don't know the things that we take for granted. And I find that's the same with most of the people I come across, is that what they know is just so valuable, and they undervalue it and don't think to put that in their products to teach so many more people how to be more successful.
Well, because we take for granted what we're good at. We think it's easy.
We do, exactly.
Because for us, it is easy.
I know it is. And you see, I don't know if you've ever done any DISC profiling stuff, this, you know, dominant influence, security, and compliance. Yeah. Well, as you might imagine, I'm high DI, right? So as a high D person, I'm so task orientated. You know, so me, I have a do list every day, which is called an action plan. And if I'm trying to make a product, I ask a question. What do I need to do this? I make a list of actions and I follow them, 1, 2, 3, 4, and get it done. But that's who I am because I'm task orientated. For other people who aren't task orientated, who might be very high I, they struggle with that type of stuff. So it takes them years to produce something they could have produced in 10 minutes. That's the beauty of the world, isn't it? That we're all so different.
It sure is. It sure is. And speaking of being different, Peter, how have some other people influenced you? In particular, what are some of your favorite resources that have been most pivotal in your career?
Well, I think I mentioned the one about Atlas Shrugged. That was for sure. That was really a life changer, Atlas Shrugged. It's 1,072 pages in 9-point font and no paragraph breaks. I mean, this is a serious book, and I've read it 9 times. So if anybody's read anything 9 times, they're either stupid or it must have some value contained within it, right? Or their memory's no good. So I've got a good memory and I don't think I'm stupid. So that's my endorsement for that. A life changer for me as well, easy to say, but it is the absolute truth, David, was the program called Lead the Field by Earl Nightingale, who was the co-originator of Nightingale Conant with Lloyd Conant. Of course, these days, the Nightingale Conant Corporation, which is about 60 years old now, is run by Lloyd's son, Vic Conant, one of the nicest men you could ever meet, I have to say. And a copy of Lead the Field would have to be in anybody's library because it contains all the basic truths of personal development. And if you listen to other programs, you can hear the influence of Lead the Field, including in mine, by the way. And the reason I'm so keen on that, it's the very first audio program I ever bought. It came on a mailer from Nightingale Conant in the UK, and I thought, well, I wasn't into audio learning, and this is 30-plus years ago. And I thought, well, I might as well send for this, and I sent for it and listened to it, and my life changed in that moment. And I have listened to audio programs ever since, so anything on audio. I mean, these days for me, Brian Tracy is just the most amazing man. He's got powerful, powerful ideas. You know, talk about the leader in human potential has to be Brian. And I think another one for me, which I'll give you 2 more if I may.
Sure.
The one is Ted Nicholas. Ted Nicholas, as I say, is supposed to be the world's most successful self-published author. Those are my words, not his. But Ted's words, because he's the best copywriter there is, Ted's words have sold over $100 billion, but just in case I'll say $100 million, but I think it's $100 billion worth of products. He's just head and shoulders. He's one of the giants. He's absolutely fabulous. And another one, this would be an unusual one, and not a lot of people will know him. His name is Roy H. Williams. And Roy H. Williams is known as the Wizard of Ads. And he specializes in spoken word ads, and he has the most amazing take on marketing. I interviewed him for about 40 minutes, and I usually say this, David, I learned more in that 40 minutes than any other 40 minutes in my life. And it's not very often you can say that about it. In fact, you can only say it once because it was a superlative. And he is the most amazing man. His books are brilliant. And certainly, I would say to anybody, you know, go check out Ted Nicholas, go check out Roy H. Williams, go check out Brian Tracy, get yourself a copy of Atlas Shrugged, and listen to anything by Earl Nightingale.
Peter, these are all great examples.
Thank you.
Who do you know personally that's currently doing work you're especially excited about, and why?
For me, I would have to go back to one of those five that I mentioned for you, and I would say it was Roy H. Williams. The work that Roy H. Williams is doing with entrepreneurs, with business owners, with the community that he is creating in America. I think he's down in Austin, Texas. I think it's in that sort of area. And he's created a campus. He's created a following, a tribe of people that think he would call, some people would pronounce this word differently. I would call it the cognoscenti. Some people would say the cognoscenti. But, the cognoscenti for me, the knowing few, I think. And I think he's the most fascinating man you could ever talk to. And if you could get him to do an interview for you, David, I think your listeners would thank you forever. I think he's the man to contact.
Great. Thank you.
Delighted.
Peter, please tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
I will. Firstly, my name is Peter Thompson, as you've mentioned, but my Thompson is spelt without the P, so it is an H, so it's T-H-O-M-S-O-N. So my website, surprisingly, is peterthompson.com. I do have another site, but everything leads from there. And talking about tips booklets, if anybody wanted to know how to write a tips booklet, I offer a tips booklet on my website, surprise, surprise, which is the 7 big time management problems, how to avoid them and squeeze more out of every single day. That's the working title, so obviously it does what it says on the tin. But if somebody got that, it's totally free of charge, then they would be able to see how I wrote a tips booklet using the ideas that I've shared with you tonight and with your listeners, David. So peterthompson.com, simple as that.
Great, great. Thank you so much. Peter, thank you for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Peter Thompson, without the P, who is one of the UK's leading strategists on business and personal growth. Thank you again, Peter, for joining us.
It was my pleasure, David. Thank you.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.